Chapter 16. Zara. The great doors of Dunmar City rumble outward as we approach, stone grinding on stone, as the mountain appears to open its wide gaping mouth. Massive gears, with rivets like metal teeth, slowly propel the doors open, worked by some unseen machinations that I can scarcely even imagine. Elias leads us up the road toward the mountain, past the farmers and the hot springs bubbling around us. Our Nightingale escorts take all of it in with ease, as if the grand display is something they've witnessed 100 times. In fact, several of them snicker at our dumbfounded expressions, jeering to their comrades and calling us names like stupid kingsmen. I pay their taunts little heed, as my eyes remain transfixed on the enormous rectangular stones before us. How much do those doors weigh, I wonder, studying the beautiful patterns carved onto their surface. And how did common people manage to build such monstrosities? The physics alone defy reason. I have to force the scholar in me to quiet down, understanding that now, regrettably, is not time to ponder their engineering. With difficulty, I manage to suppress my sense of awe and adopt a cool, regal expression once again. I ride straight-backed up the slope leading to the mountain's gaping maw, my eyes forward with a look of careful neutrality. Ahead, I can see lights emanating from inside of the enormous cave, which looks too wide to be completely natural. Lanterns, hanging from ropes strung together by long poles, bob above the rough-hewn streets, providing light in a world of eternal night. When we pass through the doorway, however, stepping over the threshold and into the city proper, the sight is even more astounding. Stone buildings and sprawling districts sprout from the cavern floor like stalagmites, their windows alight like twinkling fireflies in the darkness. People, who appear ordinary despite their unorthodox living conditions, fill the streets en masse, going about the daily tasks that exist in any major city in Tarsinium. Children run laughing through the streets, weaving between their elders, who are haggling or conversing in front of various shops and merchant shanties. Many of them look up as we enter the market, every emotion from curiosity to panic flashing in their eyes. All appearances aside, these are not the type of people who are used to dealing with outsiders. They are a people accustomed to living a completely isolated existence. I'm struck by how different the culture of Dunmar City appears to be. Fashions and architectural styles are in sharp contrast to those found in the rest of the kingdom, even though its citizens bustle about, speaking the same tongue. They live just as anyone else in Tarsinium does, working and striving to put food on the table and taking care of their families. They're just like us, I whisper to myself, watching as a woman gathers her children and hurries them away from us, concern painting her features. I don't know what I was expecting, but this certainly wasn't it.
We've only ever seen the martial side of the Nightingales, Owen replies quietly at my side. The domestic side? Well, it certainly makes you pause and consider things.
He has a sorrowful look upon his face, as if drawing from a painful memory, but he says nothing further as we continue following our caravan. The cavern, which looks to be a massive dome bored into the very heart of the mountain, houses the entire city, many thousands of people. Stalactites are abundant on the ceiling, dripping water into pools that appear to be public wells. Flat-topped homes, stores, and buildings of worship are clustered tightly together, crisscrossed with a network of narrow streets. As light emanates from 1,000 different sources, the city practically glowing with its luminescence. Curiously, I also notice several mage fire torches burning along the streets, their bluish flames blending with the orange hues of regular fires,
and giving the light an otherworldly cast. Strange, I think, as we delve deeper into the city. Does this mean that the nightingales have their own mages? Ominously, the larger-than-life doors begin to grind shut, sealing us inside the city and leaving us to our fate. My eyes quickly adjust to the unusual lighting of the streets, and I find myself struggling to maintain my mage-like demeanor, my gaze lingering on every oddity we pass. Even with the city's enormous size, we cross the diameter of the cave in short order, taking a direct route that cuts to the far side. Near the back of the cavern, a large structure looms over the other buildings like a shadowy beast, its zenith nearly brushing the top of the domed ceiling above. It's a fortress carved into the mountain itself, a multi-tiered behemoth with thick walls and stout crenellated towers. A citadel perches at the top, with a blockish keep and long pennants hanging from high terraced balconies.
"That thing looks impregnable," Talon observes as we make the final ascent to the fortress's main gate. "I doubt even the demons could break it open."
"No castle is impregnable," Owen answers, examining the walls with an appraising eye. "They all have their weaknesses. The trick is to find them and properly exploit them."
I glance at him with an amused expression and raise an eyebrow. "Stormed many castles in your day, have you?" He meets my gaze, then looks away, abashed.
"I've heard stories," he replies,
reaching to feel for his hatchet, only to realize that it's no longer on his belt.
"This may come as a surprise, but I've actually spent some time studying warfare. Part of ranger training dictates that apprentices read up on siege and battle tactics."
Talon nods knowingly, still staring at the structure's lofty towers. "I'm not as surprised to learn you studied warfare as I am that you actually know how to read." I give Owen a small, teasing smile.
"I know how to read," he replies, the corner of his mouth turning up as well. "I just don't enjoy it as much as some people."
Our mirth is cut short as we pull our horses up to the entryway of the citadel. With a rattling of chains and a loud groaning of metal, the wrought iron portcullis rises, allowing three armor-clad men to stride out and meet us. They hail Elias and the captain, prompting them and the rest of us to stop.
"What's this?"
the lead soldier asks, glaring at us and placing a hand on his sword.
"You bring outsiders to us, Elias?"
"I do,"
the ranger responds boldly, not the least bit intimidated by the man's hostile expression.
"They come bearing a message from King Aethelgar, an important message that must be delivered directly to Protector Thel."
Each of the three soldiers draws their swords, the sound of rasping steel ringing in the air. Glancing upward, I can see men with crossbows lining the wall, their weapons not only trained on Elias, but on us as well. My heart begins to beat faster, and I find myself wishing that I had a talisman so I could cast a radiant shield around us, just in case.
"You bring kingsmen and assassins into our midst,"
the lead soldier hisses, his eyes alight with fury.
"You would take them to our protector so that he can be murdered, is that it?"
"They have been disarmed,"
Elias replies calmly, pointedly not reaching for his own weapon.
"I trust them not to do anything that would endanger Protector Thel. As I said, they carry a message of great importance, and it would be in your best interest to grant us entry."
The man sneers.
"My best interest, you say? And how, might I ask, would it be in my best interest to allow the likes of them inside?"
Ignoring the swords, Elias takes a step toward the man and lowers his voice.
"You know as well as I do that demons are running rampant in the kingdom, Sturgis. If there is even a chance for peace with the crown, then it is worth considering."
The soldier, Sturgis, looks us over,
though he doesn't lower his blade.
Perhaps Azelgar is merely frightened for his own skin. Perhaps we should just let the demons ravage his kingdom while we take solace in the mountains.
Don't be a fool, Elias snaps. The might of the R'hllar will reach us even in here. Besides, the decision is not yours to make. It is Protector Thel's, and his alone.
Sturgis wavers slightly, then ultimately sheathes his sword, prompting the other two nightingales to do the same.
Fine, he says icily, but you can't bring them all inside. Pick only the important ones and release the rest into our custody.
Done,
Elias replies, turning to regard us.
Owen, Zara, come along. You too, Talon. The protector of the nightingales awaits.
R'hllose cries out, breaking away from the rest of the group and scrambling over to Elias. Sturgis moves to draw his sword again, but Elias motions for him to stay his blade.
What do you want, R'hllose?
Elias growls, eyeing the black-haired man suspiciously.
The king, the knight replies haughtily, sent me personally to ensure his interests are protected. I demand that I be allowed entry as well.
Elias considers him for a moment, revealing nothing on his stony face as he shares an unspoken glance with Sturgis. Finally, after a long, uncomfortable silence, he nods.
All right, he says. But know that I have my eye on you. If you make even a single wrong move, I'll not hesitate to kill you myself.
R'hllose matches his stare, unblinking, and smiles. Sturgis grunts and leads us into the castle, his hand never straying far from the hilt of his sword. The inside of the fortress is just as stark as its outside appearance, with a simple militaristic style and bare stone walls. The interior is illuminated by a variety of candles, torches, and braziers, giving everything an orange cast as we traverse the tunnel-like halls. Owen and Talon look about as nervous as I feel, their hands involuntarily reaching to their sides for the weapons they no longer possess. I take comfort in knowing that the three of us are going together to confront the leader of the Nightingales, even though we are surrounded by men who are probably quite eager to kill us. Weaving through a dizzying network of hallways, we eventually come to a large rectangular room with a high vaulted ceiling. It is lit by rows of smoldering braziers and a great chandelier carrying dozens of flickering candles. A handful of attendants fill the room, all congregating around a large stone dais, upon which sits a simple chair. The seat is rather plain compared to King Æthelgar's throne, lacking any sort of cushion or design on its frame. Upon it sits a man in a crisp military uniform with a small silver bird pinned on his right breast. No crown rests upon his graying head, and his face is marred by deep lines that only years of grave responsibility could create. He looks up as we enter, his blue eyes watching us with cold, calculating scrutiny. Then one of his attendants springs forward, questioning Elias with a look of slack-jawed incredulity.
What's the meaning of this? He asks,
striding up to us as we approach the throne.
Sturgis, why have you brought strangers into this court?
We've come on special assignment, bearing a message from Æthelgar of Tarsus,
Elias interjects, as cordially as I've ever heard him speak. He stops before the dais and bows, his posture indicating great respect.
Æthelgar? That traitorous king?
The attendant replies, aghast.
You've defied the laws of Dunmar City and your good sense, and have brought agents of the enemy into our midst?
They mean no harm,
Elias says evenly, straightening as he fixes the stout man with an unblinking stare.
The message they bring is of the utmost importance to the Nightingales.
The attendant, whose face has turned bright red,
begins to snap a retort at Elias, but Xander Thel cuts him off.
"Peace, Edward,"
the protector says, lifting his hand in a placating gesture at the man. His voice is calm, but commanding, a deep and resonant sound.
"This man is Elias Keane. I've known him for many years. If he has brought these people into this court, then he must have a good reason for doing so."
The attendant, Edward, sputters for a moment before visibly forcing himself to calm down. He takes a deep breath and steps back, allowing Elias to have the floor. The grizzled ranger nods appreciatively to the protector of the Nightingales.
"Thank you, Xander."
Xander leans forward in his chair, ignoring us as he focuses intently on Elias.
"When I heard about our agents in Tarsus, I feared that you'd been killed with the rest of them. How did you manage to escape?"
"I didn't escape," Elias replies. "I was captured. I spent a few weeks in the king's dungeon before he trotted me out in chains before his nobles. Then he let me go."
The protector frowns.
"He let you go?"
"Yes," Elias answers. "He released me so I could escort these messengers to Dunmar City."
He turns, gesturing to Owen and me with a calloused hand.
"These two have been on quite the adventure over the past few months, and have been commissioned by the king himself to deliver a message to you. I've brought them here in full confidence, knowing them to be honest and decent people."
With that, he clasps his hands behind his back and looks at the two of us expectantly. In fact, everyone in the throne room seems to be leaning toward us, interested in what message we have brought. I glance over at Owen, who gives me a look as if to say, "Don't look at me, Zara. You're the diplomatic one." "My lord," I begin, ignoring the nervous knot in my stomach. "I am Seeker Zara Denel of the Conclave of Mages. This is Owen Lund of the Kingdom's Rangers. We've come to speak with you about a long-forgotten threat that has resurfaced in our day, the demonic horde known as the R'hllar."
"I'm no lord," the protector replies coolly, waving his hand in a dismissive fashion. "And I've heard plenty of reports. My men have been fighting these creatures all over Tarsinium. It's good to see that they aren't the only ones who are bleeding."
"Then you know the gravity of the situation," I respond without missing a beat. "The R'hllar have a single purpose, to destroy the world and everyone in it. They don't care about our wars or our petty squabbles. In fact, they wish to use our division to their advantage, so they may more easily conquer Tarsinium when the Ark of Radiance fails." Xander eyes me for a moment, as if carefully considering my words. Then he asks,
"Is it true, then? Is the Ark of Radiance truly failing?"
I nod my head gravely. "Yes, my lord, sir. The cause of the failure is still subject for debate, but one thing is certain. At some point, probably within the year, it will completely fail."
"That's how the demons have been able to get through,"
Owen adds, stepping up beside me and setting his jaw, reminding me of his master.
"Right now they can only come through a few at a time, but their attacks are definitely becoming more frequent, indicating that our time is running out." "This validates some of my suspicions,"
the protector replies, stroking his chin thoughtfully.
"But surely you didn't come here merely to share information about the demons."
"No, I agree. We did not. We come bearing a message from King Æthelgar, an offer of peace. The king wishes to end the war between his forces and the Nightingales, at least until the R'hllar have been dealt with. Only united can we hope to survive." This time, my words prompt the various attendants to sputter and exclaim. One of them even laughs.
"A truce?"
the zealous attendant named Edward says incredulously.
"Are you daft, woman?
The minute we put our guard down, that snake will move in for the kill.
The Nightingales have been at war with the crown for years, another asserts, shaking her head emphatically. It would be folly for us to trust him, demons or no.
Protector Thel raises his hand, quieting them almost immediately. His face, unlike the others, looks contemplative. Contemplative and troubled.
I thank you for delivering this message, he says diplomatically. But you must understand, a decision to make peace with Æthelgar cannot be made in haste. I must speak with my closest advisors and do what will be best for my people. In the meantime, you are my welcome guests in Dunmar City. I will see that you are given food and lodgings, and that your associates are watched over. Of course you cannot be allowed to leave the mountain, but you may explore the city at your leisure, so long as you are escorted and do not make trouble.
So, we're to become your prisoners then, Owen mutters under his breath.
I shoot him a look, and he glances away, looking down at his boots with chagrin. The Protector, thankfully, does not comment on Owen's brusqueness.
Please, he says, motioning for us to leave. Go and see to your men. I'll send for you when a final decision has been made.
At the urging of the guards, we shuffle out of the audience room, our footsteps echoing in the silent hall. Elias comes with us until Thel calls him back, his voice cutting through the stillness like a knife.
Elias, I would speak with you for a moment. Privately.
The grizzled warrior stops and turns, his face utterly expressionless.
Of course, Protector.